very much, sir. As in the past, just to provide some background information for members before the SIU comes to brief them. I just want to start speaking off the slide just very quickly just to provide some context for the look at the overall policy environment and also speak to the, for members who might not be familiar with the SIU and the way it functions, just to speak to the mandate of the SIU and the way it operates. I think members will probably be familiar now with discussions around solar, the support given by the President for the work done by agencies such as the SIU and other anti-corruption agencies. This links very closely with the NDP, which speaks about building a resilient anti-corruption system. I think it's important to note that the NDP supports a multiplicity of agencies. I mean, it speaks to the Hawks, the SIU, the asset forces unit, and it also refers briefly to the public sector and the Auditor General. I think there was some discussion in the NDP about the possibility of one anti-corruption agency, but I think overall the decision has been that it's worth having a number of agencies because it helps support independence. The NDP does speak about the need for these agencies to be staffed and resourced sufficiently. It speaks about their operational independence, and it does warn of possibility of overlapping mandates, and it does recommend, although it doesn't say you should undertake such a review, that possibly there should be a review of mandates to establish where there might be overlap. It doesn't really speak in any detail about going forward how that should proceed. Just share very briefly that the SIU, and it's an independent statutory body. It's legislative mandate comes from the Special Investigation Unit and Special Tribunals Act 74/1996, which has been amended quite recently. Those amendments are quite important, and I'll just refer to them briefly shortly. Chair, I think it's important just to note that it's in terms of that legislation, it's the President who issues proclamations. The proclamation provides the scope of investigation. It's in terms of that scope that the unit actually investigates. It investigates maladministration, corruption in state institutions. And should I just get an idea of it investigates, it reports, to get an idea of the type of issues it uncovers in its work. I think it might be useful for members to look at the 2012-13 annual report, where the SIU identified, for instance, non-compliance with the CFMA in a range of its reports and investigations, irregularities of tender processes, supply chain management procedures not followed, competitive bids not obtained, payments claimed for work not done, incomplete work, inflated invoices, duplicate invoices, fictitious payments, public servants with business interests, non-existent beneficiaries, spouses of officials linked to entities conducting businesses with departments, officials conducting remunerative work without permission, fraudulent qualifications, collusion with service providers. So those are the sort of issues identified by the Commission in its investigation and in its reports. So I just want to highlight for members who might not be familiar with it, it doesn't get involved in criminal proceedings. If it identifies criminal activities, it will then pass those on to the SATs, to the Hawks, and also the NBA, and also the anti-corruption task force. They will deal with any kind of criminal action that needs to be taken. Chair, it might also refer, I saw in the case dealing with social development assets that need to be seized, it will refer those methods to the AFG. So it's quite a, or there should be quite a good cooperative environment there because of that link. So the unit identifies these matters, it might make recommendations to departments about disciplinary procedures that should be taken, the contracts that should be revoked. So, Chair, sorry, that was just to provide some background about how the unit works. Chair, I think it's interesting perhaps to note in terms of the proclamations. Previously, when the committee heard from the SIU in October, they mentioned they had 25 active proclamations. I see in their latest documents that they refer to 46 active proclamations. This is another challenge that the SIU has to deal with because it can't control the flow of the work that comes to it. So I think maybe I'm sure that SIU will reflect on that in terms of employment. It's a bit of a challenge in terms of in the sense that previously SIE was quite reliant on independent forensic analysts, and it contracted, spent a lot of money on this. I think in recent years it's been downgrading and that. And I see quite interesting, Chair, in the latest documentation that there is flexibility in employment numbers. I don't know what that means, but that doesn't speak to the change, the changing numbers of population and the changing workload. But I'm sure Advocate Phone will speak to that. Chair, just quickly, for members who are not aware, Advocate Phone is quite new. He was only appointed to his commission on the 1st of October last year. Quite a disappointment, it was an acting person in charge. So he's really quite new. Chair, I think his appointment has quite an impact on the strategic planning of the unit, which I'm going to speak about. His appointment combined with the amendments I referred to founding to the founding legislation. Those amendments are very significant because I spoke about previously the unit about investigating and reporting. They've now given the power to the unit to actually litigate in civil matters. So the Judicial Matters Amendment Act, three key changes, empowering the unit to institute and conduct civil proceedings in a court of law and special tribunal. I'll speak about special tribunal director, in its own name or on behalf of state institutions. It also allows the unit to charge for services. Previously, there's been, I won't go into the detail, but there's been a long time talking about, there was some litigation about legally charging, but now, it can charge with services, so advocates operate in a dual funding model. It also allows the units to take on personnel. So, Chair, this the combination of advocates only, and I just want to speak, Chair, but just may read briefly, because I think it's quite important, because in October 2013, when he came to present, he acknowledged that the unit needed to radically transform. He stated that this was because, as I've spoken to, the amendments to the founding legislation which transformed the unit from an investigating unit to one that can also litigate, and also a need to ensure that concrete results the SIE produces justify the massive financial resources it consumes in the execution of its mandate. According to Advocate Sony, the SIE had to reduce turnaround times and investigations and focus on improving operational and reporting mechanisms. To address, among other things, lack of time frames for concluding investigations, which led to dragging out investigations, as well as inconsistent and delayed reporting. In response to these challenges, does factor quite strongly in the amendments of the strategic plan, with new objectives and indicators, and also a focus on forging stronger stakeholder relationships. Chair, as mentioned, so this shift represents a change in the two. It used to be one strategic objective, it's now two strategic objectives, quality forensic investigation and civil litigation, and strategic partnerships to develop and maintain. Chair, I think that the shift in the need to focus on speeding up investigation is reflected in new indicators. Previously, there was no indication of the position of investigation. I think this was problematic, and the unit was challenged by the previous portfolio committee about delays and ongoing investigations. So I think the unit has responded to that. They've set a target which provides that 66% of all proclamations issued in the financial year must now be completed. They also speak now to the civil litigation role that they can play, and they provide now a target for 20 civil litigation matters for 2014-15. Chair, I can just refer quickly to the type of civil, just to give them some idea of the type of civil litigation matters that the unit was investigating in 2013. They reported, for example, contracts, potential civil action based on contract of $77 million for a case involving the Sichuan municipality. The Department of Works civil action was being taken in respect of a contract worth 637 million rand. In respect of SAP, civil action was being taken in respect of a contract worth 900 million rand. So I think that, you know, they were certainly starting to develop their civil litigation in that respect. That did lead to a challenge chair that they did speak about was, of course, if you're going to take on that role, you have to develop your capacity. They were in the process of developing that capacity, but I'm not sure how far along. Sony will speak to how far they've developed that capacity. Chair, sorry. Although in their strategic planning, they're consistent in the sense they talk about enhancing the relationship with the AFU. Previously, they didn't speak about that. And they also, they've also said that if people who are familiar with the SIU will see they've changed their targets quite dramatically. The previous committee did express some concern about that. But Chair, I think it's the SIU explains it in terms of a change of focus. They're moving away from smaller beneficiary-type investigations where there are a large number of people involved, maybe filing acknowledgements of debt, to focus more on contracts and procurement matters. They also had to respond to some challenges raised by the Auditor General. He expressed concern, the members will be familiar now, I think, with SMART indicators, and members expressed concern about, the AG expressed concern about the fact that the unit wasn't working to SMART indicators. Quite a few of the indicators were predictive. We will save this amount of money. And it wasn't really measurable as far as the AG was concerned. So I think the unit will have to address that in its new strategic planning. Chair, the other thing that is mentioned but not really explored in the strategic planning is advocates only speak about re-engineering the unit. Maybe that links to an issue about flexible employment. There's also been some reports that I can't really confirm is about centralizing operations in Pretoria. I'm sure that Ashley Sony will speak to that. I don't really know what that means. Chair, with respect to the budget, just quickly, members have been briefed fully now on the justice vote on the fact that the SIU budget falls under Programme 5. The DG referred to it as Programme with the odd name, Auxiliary and Associated Services, along with the Public Protector, Human Rights Commission, and Legal Aid. But it accounts independent. It doesn't account to justice for its funding. It has to go to Treasury. So it's just a conduit, basically, to feed the money. As I said, it's quite a very interesting funding model, and their previous members will be familiar with this. It received funding, as I said, through the justice vote, but it also now can charge for its services, whereas previously it wasn't able to do that. It's looking, as the slide shows, 42% of its funding is obtained from that revenue now. It's looking to increase that chairperson. But as the unit says itself, it still needs the funding it receives from Treasury because of the uncertainty in terms of its working environment. There's no guarantee, in terms of its proclamation that the amount of work, so it doesn't need some kind of baseline funding. But I think it is hoping to increase that funding along the lines of the AG over the medium term. So basically, it's two basic programs in terms of the funding model. I think it's a good sign that the majority of the budget goes to investigation rather than administration. There's some information there about post-668 posts and the vacancy rate. There have been a number of challenges with vacancies, senior managers resigning, so I'm not sure that the advocates only previously did mention they were going to be addressing that. So I'm sure they'll speak to that more. Chair, it's quite the environment in which the SIU works. They also obviously lose people because it's quite a scarce skill, I think, forensically. They've also reported on needs, and they're going to, I think, try and enhance their own in-house skills to avoid having to outsource. But they also obviously, the environment changes, criminal example, or people who are doing committing these offences, cyber forensic and forensic accounting abilities. They also say that they need to expand specialist expertise in terms of procurement, quantity surveyors, and engineers. So finally, just to conclude, I think maybe some of the challenges that the unit might be looking at in the future. is the ability to collect revenue. It's great to be able to collect money, but sometimes it can be a challenge. Also, there is the Act does provide for an exemption. Agencies and departments, for example, the previous committee were very concerned that municipalities can't afford to pay for these services, so they provided an exemption. So I don't know the uptake of exemptions and the impacts will obviously impact revenue. And also, clearly, it's now set as sub-targets, so it has to meet in terms of showing a clear, faster turnaround time for investigations. Chair, in terms of special targets, I spoke about civil litigation and the power of the now the units empowered to take civil matters to court, but they're also empowered to set up special tribunals. The advantage of the special tribunal is obviously you don't go through the court rules, you know, so things are speeded up. But there is a process to set them up. I think they have to be established by the president. The tribunal president has to be appointed under the consultation of the president and the chief justice, and then other judges have to be appointed. In October 2013, Advocate Sony mentioned that this was in progress, or looking at establishing at least one. And from their latest documentation, it doesn't seem that they've actually set one up in the chair, but I think maybe, I'm sure you'll speak to that in more detail. Chair, I've already spoken to developing a stronger in-house civil litigation capacity and some challenges that might bring about. Chair, just briefly about the resolution of AG findings. I mean, that the members have heard over the last while about qualified audits and how that's, unqualified audits. So how the improvement certainly in the departments where it had a qualified audit and now the benefits, you know, the work it's done to improve governance aspects. The unit didn't have an unqualified audit, but there were findings. And I think the unit itself has acknowledged that it should be setting the example, and it should actually be a clean audit. There should be no findings. And I think something that it's working on over the medium term. Chair, just again, the issue of re-engineering and possibly the impact of institutional health. You know, with any change in environment, people obviously, you know, that can be a challenge. If you're talking to, I think Sony's talking about centralizing operations. I don't know what that means for the region. So, but I'm sure he'll probably speak to that issue in more detail. Chair, that's it. Thank you.
Before I open the floor for questions, I just want to mention this, that at this committee, we want a very, very good working relationship with the media, to the extent that if you phone us, even at midnight, our phones won't be closed. And the reason for that is because the public is not in his chamber, and there's no one who can inform the public better than the media. But that also imposes another responsibility on the media, that before they put anything out, they must be sure that they understood what was said, and where they are not understood, they should check with who said what. Because last week, there was a big debate saying that some members of this committee wanted to clip the wings of the public protector, take away some of her powers. Maybe I was slow to understand. I didn't get any such impression from this committee. And also, this committee has no powers to clip anybody's wings, because this committee is an organ of the National Assembly. It can only make recommendations to the National Assembly. The National Assembly will say yes or no. So because English is not our mother tongue, so when people have said things and you are not sure what they are saying, please be free to interview them or phone them, even if it's at night, so that we don't communicate misunderstandings to the public, because there are also some commentators who are not here. If we communicate something, they use that something to make an irresponsible statement as well. So it's important that we work together and listen to one another. Where one is not clear, ask for clarification, so that the most important people who are the public are well informed. I say this because I have heard you talk about Julian overlapping of mandates, and you even said something about a review of mandates. So people may come again and say the committee wants to reduce the mandates of people or take away the powers of people. So can you just elaborate on who we are not, it's not the committee that's saying that. Who is saying that? And which mandates are they referring to? Where the overlap between who and who?
Sure, I'm quoting there directly from the National Development Plan, because it speaks about the number of agencies. That's the SIU, ASU, and the Public Service Commission. It says the Public Protector and the ASU also investigate corruption, although this does not form part of their core mandate. Some have argued that the multiplicity of anti-corruption agencies undermines the fight against corruption as it divides sources and has resulted in an uncoordinated approach. There's been debate about a single anti-corruption agency. But according to the NDP, they reckon that the South Africa does not have the administrative capacity or institutional foundation to make one agency a viable option. In terms of, the NDP speaks about a functioning anti-corruption system requiring sufficient staff and resources, special legislative powers, high-level information sharing and coordination. It says a single agency approach is less resilient in this respect, because if a lone anti-corruption body faces political capture, the independence of the entire system is compromised. A multiplicity of agencies provides checks and balances that are essential. However, the institutional independence of anti-corruption agencies is contentious, since they are all accountable to the executive. Another issue is overlapping mandates and poor coordination between agencies. Duplication between agencies indicates a clearer demarcation of functions. Furthermore, weak coordination undermines their ability to investigate and prosecute corruption. The Commission proposed a review of the mandates and functions of all agencies with a view to some rationalization. However, the autonomy of each agency should be reinforced to insulate them from political pressure. So, Chair, that's the context of the NDP.
It's very clear that we are enjoined to implement the NDP, and that those are the findings of the NDP. So when we open the matter for debate, we're not accusing any agency of anything. We are saying there is a problem statement. We have a responsibility to address it. Thank you very much.
What do you think? Anything you recommend you do in Shantong?
In Shantong? It's the Faradani Garden.
Faradani Garden.
You know, I kind of wandered on, and they, people put on, do the whole the promenade, the seafront, and people kind of, they put on stools and they cook.
Yeah, they keep it open at night?
It's open at night, yeah.
Okay, also the problem is it's Faradani, so...
Yeah. So people will be going in to break their fast. But yeah, you go on there and it's Ramadan, but if you keep it, you know, dressed. You have to just pick your ball and they're not going to come to you. Want you to go and wear there. You can get if you go for it, you know, it's not that easy to do.
Honorable members, let's welcome Advocate Sonny and his delegation. I can see that not everybody in the delegation is represented on the list that I have. If we just request you to introduce your team and thank you for accepting our invitation. You are welcome and the floor is yours.
May I certainly on my own behalf thank you and members of your committee for giving me the indulgence of moving the date of our presentation. I told you it was due to personal circumstances, and I deeply appreciate the understanding you and your committee share. I really thank you for that question. Shimon, let me go at an official level and begin with introducing the chief. Sitting right at the far, on my far right, is Mr. Leonard Lekota. He is the program director. Then got Ms. Zeria Nyaki. And we've got Mtombi Motsabedi and Chris Quatt. Submitted to you the our strategic plan and annual performance plan, the strategic plan. Chairman, the strategic plan is for the period 2015 to 2019, and the annual performance plan is for the financial year 2014 to 2015. Chairman, in effect, what we are going to say is summarize effectively what's contained in those two documents, and the issues that I will be raising in this presentation, Chairman, would be firstly give a brief introduction on where the SIU is in regard to its transformation strategy, and then give you, Mr. Chairman, in order, the strategic overview, the programs, the investigations, the performance targets, the budget, the human resources aspect of the organization capacities, and the challenges we face. And then, of course, Mr. Chairman, we would welcome the questions that will arise from those. Mr. Chairman, what is not contained in here is what I would like to begin with, and that is to say that when I took over the SIU in October 2013, the SIU has to a large extent been operating on the basis of the fact that it was an investigating unit whose main task was to produce reports to submit to the President. It became quite obvious, and it was before my time, that the major changes were made thereafter, that in view of many far-reaching changes to the SIU Act that had been introduced in October 2012, it was necessary that the SIU change its manner of operation. Sherman, without going into the legalities, let me say essentially previously what happened is that the president would issue a proclamation, the SIU investigated, and as a matter of course, it sent information or evidence to the prosecuting authorities or to the head of department concerned about disciplinary matters and would advise on possible civil recoveries or other civil action that needed to be taken. Chairman, when we re-looked at what the effect of the 2012 amendments were, what we realized was that Parliament was in effect by introducing the amendments saying to us, we know there is maladministration. We know there are malpractices. Everybody tells us that. And there are many, many reports that come out from the different institutions, constitutional institutions and so on. What we now want is for somebody to do something about it. Mr. Chairman, that is in effect what we are now attempting, and that's the turnaround transformation strategy we have been implementing. So, Mr. Chairman, whereas previously there were two main activities for us. One is effectively investigating and gathering information and then submitting a report to the President. We now have five activities. As soon as the proclamation is received, we would investigate, as we are required to do in terms of the Act, we would investigate the matters set out in the proclamation. But at the same time, in order for there to be an effective counter to maladministration, corruption, and malpractice, what we do is, as soon as we collect information relating to delinquent employees of state departments, we send such evidence to the head of the department and advise that such evidence should be used in disciplinary matters. Where there is a suspicion that crimes have been committed, we gather the evidence and give it to the prosecuting authority. So that's the third activity. Fourth activity, Mr. Chairman, is where we are of the view that civil action has to be taken, and generally, Mr. Chairman, I'm not confining it to the Category 2, where somebody has unduly benefited, then we would either ourselves or advise the State Department concerned to bring applications in the High Court or actions in the High Court for recoveries. Sometimes, Mr. Chairman, one is not looking at a recovery, but looking for a mechanism to stop the maladministration. I give an example, Mr. Chairman, where a person has been appointed to a position and we are of the view that something should be done, we would approach either the Labour Court or the High Court to have that appointment set aside. And, Mr. Chairman, it's known now because it's been reported quite widely in the press. One of the recent examples is where we've brought an application to set aside the appointment of the head of the SPASA. Because I need to say to you, Mr. Chairman, that application is being defended, but that's the type of action we are taking. Then, firstly, Mr. Chairman, when that is, generally speaking, completed, we would send our report to the President. I need to say this, Mr. Chairman, previously, the report to the President was effectively what our contribution to the fight against corruption and maladministration was. Now it has changed significantly. What society expects from us and what we believe Parliament intended us to do is to say, you've uncovered wrong, now go and fix it up. If people have unduly benefited, go and get the money back. If people have misconducted themselves, don't just tell us that. Ensure that the State Department acts and ensure that the prosecuting authorities prosecute. That, in in essence, Mr. Chairman, is where we are trying to get to. I have to say it's a difficult road because we've not done this before. We've not conceived our mission to be that. And it is against that background, Mr. Chairman, that I now turn to the strategic plan and our plan for this year. Chairman, what I have said is to a large extent amplified in the document, the first three or four pages constituting strategic plan. It tells you how we want to go about it, for instance. And I want to say we're not there yet, but we hope not yet. Now, the two documents that we have submitted to you, as I've already indicated, Mr. Chairman, are the 5-year strategic plan and the annual performance plan for 2014 and 15. They encapsulate our vision, mission, and strategic objectives. And if I could summarize what they say, our vision, Mr. Chairman, is to provide timely forensic, professional forensic investigations into maladministration and malpractice in order to protect the public interest and reverse the scourge of corruption in our society. Mr. Chairman, perhaps this might be a good time for me to make the following point. We all generally talk about corruption as if corruption and maladministration are one and the same thing. Might not necessarily be so, Mr. Chairman, because corruption has a particular meaning where there is an exchange of a reward for doing a corrupt act. But maladministration doesn't require a reward. Maladministration simply means that the official concern has not practiced proper administration as is required in terms of our constitutional principle, in terms of the PFMA, and in terms of the various guidelines that are issued by various departments of state, but in particular the Treasury. Now, our mission, Mr. Chairman, is to use our unique forensic investigation and legal skills in the valiant war that a number of institutions are waging on corruption. And with us, Mr. Chairman, it is by conducting forensic investigations into state institutions and seeking the positive results as indicated through litigation, disciplinary hearings, and criminal prosecutions. Chairman, may I at this point emphasize this? It is not that we are doing this for the first time. What we've realized is that when we simply hand over, for example, evidence to the NPA and or to the HOD where a disciplinary action should be taken, what often happened is the file lay on the desk between our two offices. Nobody would pick it up. But what we do is we now say, we've done the hard work, here it is, please give us a progress report because we are now going to report to the president even after we have sent our report to the president. So it's not simply a static thing that is following up all the time to ensure that there are these positive results. Mr. Chairman, then our ultimate strategic outcome is to uncover corruption and to take these positive steps. And I've already, in a sense, foreshadowed how we intend achieving our strategic objectives. One is we conduct investigation, undertake civil and other litigation, and then we develop strategic partnerships with the different institutions, for example, with the head of departments, with the heads of departments, or with the prosecuting authorities. Mr. Chairman, as I've indicated right at the outset, that these changes in our operations have been brought about by the amendments to the Special Investigative Unit and Special Tribunals Act of 1996. I've indicated up to now, Mr. Chairman, what steps we take, but one of the other far-reaching changes that was introduced by the 2012 amendments was it allows the SIU to charge state institution for the investigations that conducts. I'll attempt to explain why I believe Parliament introduced that. But let me go back a step, Mr. Chairman. Previously, what used to happen was when a proclamation was issued by the President, say to investigate the Department of Public Works, in order for the SIU to be paid, there had to be an engagement, an agreement, they call it a service level agreement, between the SIU and the state institution. And so we would then produce various outcomes to them, and they would pay us based on that. But effectively, Mr. Chairman, that could, and I'm not saying this, that could compromise the nature of the investigations, because the person you were investigating was effectively your paymaster. Now, the Auditor General audits all state departments. He doesn't seek your permission. He sends you a bill at the end of whatever work he does. And in a sense, that's the change that Parliament introduced. They effectively enhanced our independence. It allowed us to investigate state departments with or without their approval, and we didn't need to have service level agreements in order to be paid. That's the income that we derive for the work we do. Very similar to the work that the Auditor General does. But significantly, Mr. Chairman, it also nevertheless requires a certain amount of cooperation. So what we would do, instead of signing an SLA, we would have a document with every state institution that with investigation, we would have a terms of engagement document where we would outline the steps we would take and how the timetable we were going to have so that we could they would know where we are going to. We set a deadline for when things were going to be done, and we would then indicate to them at the end of a particular process how much was due to the FIU. I think all of this, Mr. Chairman, because you would note that there is a large debtors book. The debtors book is effectively a relic of the past when we had SLAs with departments, and they now complain that we've not produced in terms of the SLAs. For that, I take full responsibility, because if a department is being investigated, one can't tell the department what the outcome is. The only person who is entitled to our reports is the press, not anybody else. And so what departments have been doing is to say, where are the reports you used to give us? And we say, we don't give reports anymore. Those reports are the outcomes that we believe the states should take against you, and we advise the president about what those are. Now, I've already indicated, Mr. Chairman, the five steps we take. Also indicated to you that we now have shortened the time periods in which we finalise our investigation. I'm sorry to report, Mr. Chairman, that because there was a concentration on reports, our reports often took a long time. There'd be a period of sometimes years between the issue of the proclamation and the submission of the report to the President. We are trying desperately to shorten that period, and we have set ourselves outside limits of about 6 months between issue of the proclamation and the submission of the report to the President. Now, let me also say, Mr. Chairman, that there is a major value to how we now operate. In the past, what would happen is there would be a proclamation in 2008, and the report to President would go out in 2011, 2012. By the time anybody could take any action, the employee concerned had looted the public purse, gone away, opened his own business, and I can give examples of that, or had left the department for greener pastures, or the evidence has been lost, and the matter in respect of recoveries, or the claim in respect of recovery, had effectively prescribed. So we were left with no effective remedy except being able to point out that Mr. X is alleged to have done A, B, and C. But Mr. Chairman, there is an even greater value to what we now do or the way we now operate, and it is this. We don't have the power, as the FIU, to dismiss an employee. We don't have the power to convict a person guilty of maladministration or corruption. Nor do we have the power to take money away, even if we are absolutely persuaded and convinced that that should be recovered or a contract should be cancelled. Section 34 of the Constitution says, Mr. Chairman, that everybody who has a right to have a legal dispute resolved by a court or a tribunal is entitled to do it. Now, the courts and different tribunals have been set up so that positive results eventuate from such exposure as we try to bring to bear following our investigations. So what we do is we take these matters, or we get others to take them to court, so that there is a judicial or final pronouncement, tribunal pronouncement, on what wrong has been done. And we may be absolutely convinced that Mr. X is guilty of maladministration or corruption, but we take the matter to court and the court acquits him. At the end of the day, society is the better because justice has been done. We have not falsely pronounced on the guilt or otherwise of a person. But on the other hand, if a person is guilty, it's not sufficient for us to pronounce on his guilt. It is more important for society that if a person has benefited to the tune of 10 million rand, that 10 million rand is put back into the public purse. That person is removed from public office. So that's really speaking, Mr. Chairman, the where we are in relation to the work we do. Chairman, may I then just say where we are in relation to the work we're doing? At the moment, there are 46 active proclamations, some dating back to the past. We are happy to pronounce, Mr. Chairman, that in the last 6 months, there have been 8 new proclamations issued. That is, generally speaking, the average that has been issued for each of the past 5 years. So we're quite happy, Mr. Chairman, that we are now busy chasing the real wrongdoers and hoping to recoup something from society. It's the 46, the others in the 46 that worry us because they stem from the past. We are desperately trying to clear books on those. In addition, Mr. Chairman, there are nine applications for new proclamations. Chairman, let me perhaps explain how this happens. A State Department would come to us and say, look, we have an internal investigation. The report reveals the following. We want something to be done. We would assist the State Department by motivating for the President to issue a proclamation. We would analyze the information that is given to us so that the terms of the proclamation are such as to ensure that society's interests are sufficiently protected by the nature of the investigations we do. So those are the nine that are now before the President for the President's discussion. Mr. Chairman, may I then go on to the next issue? And these are our performance targets as set out in the MTEF. For 2013 and 14, you will see that there are a number of matters where we say baseline established. That effectively means, Mr. Chairman, that the targets on for 2014, for the following years, for 2014, 15, 15, 16, and 16, 17, are those that have now been set. And the reason mainly, Mr. Chairman, is as you will see, and you will see an earlier page that previous in the last 3 years there were no new proclamations that have been issued. Now we have made it a goal that we will assist State Departments to try and secure proclamations, and that is one of the strategic objectives that we have and which we put up as a mechanism by which our success or otherwise should be measured. So for the coming financial year, or the present financial year, our target is 20 proclamations. We're already on 8, and I've indicated there are 9 more in the pipeline, and we're hoping to reach that target. Then, Mr. Chairman, the next target is the percentage of issued proclamations that are finalized. And you see, Mr. Chairman, we say 66%. Again, Mr. Chairman, that won't include the 46, because the 46 are from the past. And our targets are now that at least two-thirds of all the investigations we start in a particular year must be finished in that financial year. And we think that's a reasonable target. That's why we set it for the next few financial years. Then, Mr. Chairman, the next target is, of course, recoveries that we make. You see, Mr. Chairman, that the recoveries are divided into two parts, the potential recoveries and the actual value of the recoveries we make. The potential recoveries, Mr. Chairman, arises at this level. What would happen is, for example, we would have a situation where a person has wrongly obtained a welfare grant or some other benefit, and our investigations produce the evidence to be sufficient to convict the person or to secure a successful claim in the civil courts. Sometimes what a person would do is to say, okay, I acknowledge that I've wrongly benefited, and this is the amount I will pay you. So the potential reflects the amount that that person has agreed that is owing to the state. The next line, Mr. Chairman, would be that which is actually recovered for that financial year. And, Chairman, that there is a difference between the two is not really surprising, because sometimes the person would say, okay, I earn so much of money, I will pay 1,000 rand a month. I owe 1,000,000 rand, I'll pay 1,000 rand. So that is spread over a rather long period. Mr. Chairman, it's a practical mechanism. One goes, or at least in that way one is getting the money, but we need to reflect the difference between the potential and the actual values. And so that's why one sees the difference. I also say, Mr. Chairman, that in regards to the 261, these are also a number of matters that arose in the past dealing mainly with such things as welfare benefits. And that's why the figure of 261 is higher than the 200 million that we are hoping to recover. That we hope to recover in respect of rather larger contracts that we hope to set aside, or where people have unduly benefited. Then, Mr. Chairman, the number of civil matters is the next in the presentation. You'll see again, Mr. Chairman, that for 2013 and 14, it's 1338. That again, you will see, is a large number compared to 20 we are now talking about. And that's mainly because we are looking at small amounts of money in respect of what I would call rats and mice corruption. Namely, a person taking a benefit of 300, 400, 1,000 rand a month. Whereas the 20 we are talking about, Mr. Chairman, and we talk about this at the SIU as being the lions and tigers and the elephants, those, the big fishes as well, who are involved in these activities. And that's where we are focusing our attention and our investigations. Now, then, Mr. Chairman, may I deal with the question of strategic partner relations, and you will see none of those baselines have been established in the past, and I've already alluded to that. And what effectively happened is we just gave these. Now we say we will measure the numbers by actually giving the evidence in a form that could be used in court. So in respect of matters for the NPA, our target is 50. In respect of referrals to the AFU, our target is 15. And in respect of disciplinary matters, our target for this year is 100. So may I then go to the budget itself. You will see that the budget for the 2015 to 2016 year is about 20 million rand more. It represents about 5% increase. And that's what we hope to achieve, and what we have spent the money on. This is reflected in the different amounts reflected in the last block, and this is where we generated our revenue from. That's reflected in the middle block, because the first figure is the 2009 million, Mr. Chairman, would be the amount we expect in respect of the recoveries after we have booked the different departments we've investigated. And then the 296, Mr. Chairman, would be amounts that Parliament makes available to assist us where there are shortfalls. Chairman, may I then go to the next, which is the budget breakdown, and the income, Mr. Chairman, is 503 to 510, that's what it was by. And the other figure perhaps I should mention, Mr. Chairman, is the other expenses. And you will see, Mr. Chairman, that that rises from 93, just above 93 million rand, to 175 million rand. Mr. Chairman, may I point out that in respect of that, part of the increase is due to the fact that we are hoping that the special tribunals that the Act makes provision for are up and running. And I say something about the tribunal system. Sherman, you have already alluded to Section 34 of the Constitution, which says disputes must be resolved in court of law or tribunals. Now, the Special Investigation Act and Tribunals Act makes provision for tribunals to be set up. I need to say, Mr. Chairman, the status of the tribunals is a matter that may have to be debated. What happened, Mr. Chairman, when the Act was first passed, the tribunal had been established. That tribunal was based in East London, because you will recall, Mr. Chairman, this, the commission was in fact what was referred to as the Hague Commission, which had its seat of operations in East London. Now, the tribunal officers are there. But due to a number of court cases in the early 2000s, Mr. Chairman, the tribunal effectively stopped operating, although a chairperson had been appointed to the tribunal. Now, the question that is going to arise is that tribunal the tribunal that must be arrived, or would the president now, in terms of the Act, be required to set up a new tribunal? That is a question. It's not going to be a controversial question, Mr. Chairman. It's just going to be a question of analyzing the various developments that are taking place. But what we can say, Mr. Chairman, is that a chairperson of the tribunal will have to be appointed, because the person who was appointed and has been in that position has now retired as a judge. But we are hoping to get that tribunal running, and that we believe will be a major expense that we will be incurring. Chairman, there are one or two matters that I should comment on in respect of the budget, and that's in the next slide that is presented to you. And I just ask for one indulgence, Mr. Chairman. In the first bullet point, we say the 2014-15 budget is 1.3% higher than the actual spending. It should, in fact, be budget, sorry, income, Mr. Chairman, not spending. And as I've indicated, Mr. Chairman, that rise is by virtue of the fact that we can now charge for the services we are rendering. Mr. Chairman, we also dealt with the expenditure trends, and we say employee costs are budgeted by 15%. We expect our numbers to increase. And, Mr. Chairman, in the second last bullet point, we've put in the figure of 87, that should actually be 104, Mr. Chairman. But, Mr. Chairman, while I'm on the question of employee costs, may I make this point, because it will come up in our operations, and it would not be fair or responsible of me not to mention it at this point. Mr. Chairman, in view of the fact that we were mainly an investigating unit and didn't go or didn't concentrate or focus on these various those steps I've been talking about, the skills that our employees had to have mainly had to be of an investigative nature. But that obviously has to change, because we're going to have to bring in some heavyweight legal skills to ensure that these processes are successfully pursued. So I mean, it's not going to be an easy thing, and I'm not complaining, but I don't want the next time we come here in a few months to be asked, but why didn't you raise this with us? To get good lawyers, Mr. Chairman, is much easier. We've embarked on a creative process. We have approached members of the profession the legal profession, attorneys and advocates, to spend 3 or 4 months with us, where they can gain skills in respect of certain aspects of their careers, and we have the benefit of their legal experience. But what they would then do is, after 3, 4 months, 6 months, and we had different arrangements with them, they would go back to their practices. But we are getting that's the only way at present to improve the legal skills that are available to us. And it may be that we are going to have to employ many, many more lawyers, and we may need to spend a lot more money on that. But for the time being, what we intend doing is to continue with this process that we have started, see where it goes, and then, of course, if we want to fill those positions full time, we would have to follow the usual process, and that would take some time. But just to say, Mr. Chairman, we are not sitting back and saying we don't have the skills. We are making every attempt to have those skills available so that we are not in a position where we said, well, we can't take legal action, or we can't determine what disciplinary steps should be taken, or what criminal action should be taken against following individuals. Chairman, at the moment, the staff complement is 564, as I've indicated, that staff profile will have to change. But just from an employment equity point of view, Mr. Chairman, it perhaps is something that we can take some pride in. You'll see, Mr. Chairman, on the right-hand column that 51% of our employees are ladies and 49% are men. Then, Mr. Chairman, in terms of our racial profile as well, we believe we've done pretty well. Of course, I think we need to up the representation of colours in the SIU. But otherwise, Mr. Chairman, I think we've done reasonably well, having regard to the work we do and the opportunities that are available for people elsewhere. So we are competing for a very scarce set of skills and resources. So our profile with Mr. Chairman is not something we need to be ashamed about. I've already, again, Mr. Chairman, in terms of our organizational capacity, indicated to you that we would have to get more lawyers, and that's the main thing. What we also would need to think about, Mr. Chairman, is the extent to which we would need the number of administrative staff we have and so on. It may be we're a bit top-heavy on that score, but those are things that we will report to you as this process begins to unfold. There is, though, a further matter that I must raise, Mr. Chairman, because it does create tensions between management, and especially me and the trade union. That is this. Sherman, there are times when we have 15 investigations which requires a massive human resources injection. But 6 months later, we don't need that many people. So what we're going to have to do, and we've been strategizing about it, we're going to have to say, well, for certain projects, we need to hire people. It may cost a little more because it's not a full-time job and so on. But that flexibility is what we are going to have to bring to our operations. Otherwise, Mr. Chairman, we are going to be moving at the pace of a slow elephant because we just have so many people whom we're going to have to carry throughout. So we're going to need to have the flexibility I talked about. And of course, there would be questions raised about the fairness of those processes and so on. And for me, Mr. Chairman, nothing in our public administration allows for easy answers. On the one hand, I cannot, as the head of the unit, justify keeping 600 people on my books when at a particular time we only need 400 for a period of 6 months. So we're going to have to find, and of course, our laws are there. One would have to operate within those rules. But I merely place in the public arena, Mr. Chairman, that these issues will arise in the public space, in the press, and we will deal with it, Mr. Chairman, in terms of Section 33 of the Constitution, which requires us to act lawfully, reasonably, and in a procedurally fair manner, and we will comply with the provisions of the labor relations. And as I've indicated, Mr. Chairman, it's not, I've concentrated on lawyers, but there would be other skills, but we will, to the extent necessary, keep this committee informed about those steps so that, if necessary, we can seek any wisdom from this committee to deal with those challenges. So, Chairman, those are now, that's the issue I now come to, the challenges. There are effectively three challenges. The first is the inflow of proclamations. I've indicated, Mr. Chairman, that we use this now as a target. But whether or not there is a proclamation is not a matter that is within our hands. It's for the President to decide. Having said that, Mr. Chairman, I place this on record, that the President has up to now, since the period I've been there, never refused, when a State Department has asked for a proclamation, the President has never refused. But again, Mr. Chairman, it's not within our hands. At the same time, Mr. Chairman, one must, in terms of our strategic partnerships with different state departments, because what we are deeply conscious of, Mr. Chairman, is that we are a service-providing unit. We have skills which departments need. Now, let me say, Mr. Chairman, departments come to us and say, but we have this problem. Will you investigate? And our approach now is, Mr. Chairman, until we get a proclamation, we can't investigate. But to assist you in determining the depth of the problem and whether a proclamation will be justified, we will second to you some of our personnel who will assist you to make that determination. And so, in a way, it helps the department because it understands the nature of the problem, and once it's identified that it justifies the proclamation, it assists us in that we now have other work to do for the public good. And then I've already alluded to the fact of specialist legal skills. And then the third one, the third challenge to Ms. Sherman is that what one needs to do is to create a greater synergy between us and the various institutions whom we rely on to take positive action. In particular, the two arms, the heads of department who would have to take steps against their employees when we suspect they may be guilty of misconduct, or the director of public prosecutions who would effectively, to whom we would give the evidence. And what we are hoping to do, Mr. Sherman, is by continually saying, we sent this to you in February. Where are we in this process? Is to put a bit of moral pressure on them to ensure that the outcomes for society are in fact real. So that's the presentation we have prepared for the Honourable Committee. I don't know if you want me to say anything else or to open the you want to open the door for questions.
Thank you very much for a very clear presentation, which has also educated some of us on how the law operates. Before I open, I just want to get clarity, because we are not the only investigating institution. And I'm very much interested in how you are approaching this. You are seeking to motivate that as a need, and then the president acts on that. And you are saying the president has no problems. He never turns things down.
Not while I've been here.
Yes.
And I understand even previously.
Which is a very positive thing in my mind. But the point that you come to, where you say you don't judge, pronounce on the guilt or otherwise. Is that how all investigating institutions work, or is that your preference, or something that you think that is enjoined by the law?
Mr. Chairman, until October 2012, the FAU's main job was to produce reports, and effectively, it said to the president, we believe so-and-so is guilty of maladministration, so-and-so is guilty of criminal misconduct. The 2012 amendments have changed the script quite dramatically for the SIU. Now, Mr. Sherman, given the powers we have, we've asked ourselves the following questions. How best do we use this? Now, let me give an example, Mr. Chairman. I've already indicated that we have said that the appointment of Mr. Nkosi at USASA is invalid. We've now brought an application. In the past, what would have happened is we would have said this in our report. Whether somebody took it to court or not, doesn't matter, because two things happened. One is we've pronounced on the validity or the invalidity of the appointment. But two, and for me this is where society loses, that person remains in his position. We don't have the power to remove a person. We don't even have the power to discipline. So we ask ourselves, how do we get the society's interest given the powers we have? So instead of now, in respect to the matters where we ourselves can go to court, we say that this official we believe is guilty of corruption because we've detected 5 million rand in his account from a company which received him. Now we can pronounce on it, but that money is not brought back to the taxpayer until some court says return the money, and that judgment is executed. Now, to get to your question, Mr. For me, given the powers we have, we believe this is the most constructive way for us to do it. It serves no purpose. It doesn't make a difference to society what we say about a person. What society wants to know is, what have you, given your powers, done about that to protect our interests? You say 5 million rand is owing. What steps have you taken to bring it back? And we ask society to judge us on that basis.
Thank you very much. I noted the Honorable Tejela, Honorable Chabalala, Honorable Rehlin Hayes, Honorable Schwartz, Honorable Schopen, Honorable Tapun, Honorable Machat, Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the SRU for their comprehensive briefing. There are two issues that I'd like to raise with Advocate Training. The third is that I note in your report that you you think that it would be advantageous to conduct criminal and civil procedures simultaneously. I'd like to know why you think this is a particularly good idea, given the nature of which you processed. And my second question relates to the report on Kandla. Mr. Foff wrote to you asking for some detail regarding the delay in the finalization of this investigation. You replied that the delay was due in the main to certain third parties who weren't cooperating. Could you then please tell the committee who these respondents, I believe there's two of them, are who are not cooperating? What their relationship is with the Department of Public Work and what work they perform. What steps you've taken to ensure the timeless cooperation of these parties, given that you say you apply pressure to ensure compliance. And can you tell the committee when the report might be ready for submission to the President? And then could you also just tell us briefly if you see any difficulty in submitting such a report to a person who may be irritated therein? Thank you.
You seem to be between a hammer and envy, because you're supposed to be investigating corruption of government, employed by government, reporting to the president of which government department serves under him. So I'm sitting here and I don't know what to say to you, because I'm looking at your employee cost, 235 million, 82 million. I mean, the budget is in front of us. Why as a country are we willing to spend so much money on investigations that we yourself say after you have done them, you have no power of what happens thereafter? which means we investigate sometimes for the sake of investigating, because nothing happens after that. That's my first concern. My second one, in fact, for me, just based on that, I shouldn't even be talking further to you, because in essence, with due respect to you, because I think you are committed and you do your work loyally. But with due respect, I would say it's like dealing with a toothless dog. You work and work and work and then nothing happens. Just based on that alone, I shouldn't be investigating. I shouldn't be talking to you further, but I will take you as you are now and just read a few points even internally as you are. Your employee costs seem to be extremely high. 235 million and your investigative consultant sits at 82 million. Then your travel and accommodation. So because you're an investigating unit, and I know it's becoming a trend in most government departments, your employee costs are far huge than your actual critical job that you do. So for me it's a problem, because it means we are paying a lot of people huge amounts of money, but the actual output is very minimal. And I think it links to the question, to the statement you made before, that it's hard to find a good lawyer, which is another thing that concerns me. We are in a country where everything is being fed into a stress key, but it's a country of high unemployment. I mean, as you and me see here, there are lawyers with LLB who are unemployed. And here we are, we are being told to find a good lawyer is difficult. Because then I would say, if your area is so specialized, do what other specialized departments do, like defense. Do in-house training. Let them and prepare them yourself. If you feel the skill is so specialized to that nature. I think on the record, that statement disturbs me. That law has suddenly also become a scarce skill.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Tony, for the brief. I would like to reflect for a moment on the position in relation to the budget and the annual performance plan of the unit. And preface that by saying that this is a creature, if you will, of a very specific time and of a very specific context, 1996. This is a period in which bodies like the Public Protector, the Auditor General, and a number of other bodies were finding their feet. And if you read the Act, the principal act in this case, it speaks of investigating maladministration, improper and unlawful conduct, things that you will find in the Act of the Public Protector, things that you find in the Auditor General. So, for me, the primary question is, has this unit, because the Act speaks of units and tribunals, has this unit as a single body uplifted its usefulness? Is there any reason for it to continue existing, and on what basis? Especially because my concern is that Section 4 of the Act, this is not strictly speaking, it's very difficult to call it an independent investigative unit. It's an extension of the executive. It reports to the executive. It functions purely on the goodwill of the executive to proclaim any investigation. So, and I'm glad that the Ascasoni has indicated that the President hasn't said no yet. I think we all know that the President finds it very difficult to say no to anything, or he doesn't like hearing the word no. So, that is good to hear, but for how long? And my other question relates to that is, how often has the unit itself approached the President and initiated or requested proclamation? I'm not talking about a state entity or department coming to the unit and say, we want you to investigate this. On its own initiative, has the unit gone to the President and requested an investigation? And then what was the reception of that? My second question relates to the question from Ms. Breitenbach next to me. In terms of Section 12A(b) of the Act, it makes it a criminal offence for anyone to hinder, obstruct the work of the SIU or to refuse to answer. Now, if we hear that there are people delaying the report on Bandla, on what grounds and whether the unit has considered approaching the relevant body to institute criminal investigations or prosecution of people who are hindering this investigation? Thank you.
And we just bear in mind that we are a justice court, and therefore when we make statements, they mustn't be so general that we don't even know what we're talking about. Because if you make a statement, you say we, it must be clear, are you referring to a political party or this committee? because people must refuse your opinion, say I, don't say we, because it can be all of us.
Thank you, the person, and thank you, Advocate Tony. Just a few general issues. I want to find out from you about the Access to reports. And you indicated where you might make finding the difficulty, the two challenges where departments don't follow up. Surely we as Parliament can assist you in that regard as well. But do we have sight of those reports? If one takes your report earlier this year into SADC, for example, where, as we understand, rampant corruption, we also understand other reports as well, the public protectors report. Now we see, for example, the temporary or acting chief operations officers now being permanently appointed. Would that be something that you might consider taking on a view as well, like you did with other issues? That's a particular question on the SADC. Then I'd like to ask you about the issue of the special tribunals. Obviously, this is key to your success. And it is a bit of concern that it seems to be taking time. I appreciate the legal complexities of that, but that warrants the existence of this unit, that you can then go to a special tribunal quickly and get a forfeiture order or an order quickly. At the moment, I presume you have to go to the asset forfeiture units or other units to get a freezing order or claim. You're quite correct. You're 100% correct. It's getting the money back. And that is why we would like, is there any way we can assist you in getting that tribunal up and running? But it is, time is passing. And I think you reported to us previously, if the Act was passed in October, it's approaching 2 years, 18 months. So we do need to see some progress in that regard. Then, do you also have delays in the proclamations? Does that also inhibit your work, where you might have a pre-investigation, you have a department come into you, and there might be a delay in the issuing of that proclamation? As you know, previously where I said, and it has been a response of my question to the SIU, what is the extent of corruption? The figure that was given was 30 billion rand per year, conservatively estimated procurement fraud. So when you look at your figures, and I appreciate the complexities, but when you look at your targets, I'm sure you agree with me, in the context of the extent of corruption, that is very low. And if you look, you might not have had the benefit of looking at the NTA figures. We see their figures for prosecutions, successful prosecutions, are also dropping. So whilst you put this rampant corruption, my concern is, our targets seem to be, are we losing the war against corruption? If you look at your client's figures now for the unaudited figures, unaudited, where it was 100 million was the aim and you got 261 million. Now again, against the context of 30 billion rand, I'm sure you'll agree with me that it is almost insignificant. But is your target not too low then? If you already got 261 million, the next year, should you not consider lifting your target? Well, you've got, you achieve 261 million, your aim for the next financial year, this year that we're in, only 200 million. Again, with actual value of cash and assets recovered, where your target was 32 million, you've already achieved 75.8 million. Again, should the target, there your target is 100 million. Then just on the rats and mice you referred to, I don't quite understand that, because your civil matters, 1,338, and that's now dropped to 20. Surely there is ongoing rats and mice cases. Or have you finished all those ones that you're not going to have? Help us understand the drop from a target of 1,338 to 20. And it's a significant drop. And surely it's not only, you're not only going to do the multi-million rand cases. Surely there's going to be lots of smaller cases as well. And then lastly, I didn't quite understand the lack of, when the previous you had value of procurement matters where irregularities, the billions, the savings going forward. Do you remember those targets? And they don't seem to be here anymore. Where we could see you have cancelled these contracts and it's a long-term saving of billions of rand. Now surely if you're approaching a systemic nature, we would see that. And is that not something that we need to debate about as well? Then so the issue of invoicing from the partners. Is there a problem with that? Obviously you're reliant with your funding to the degree that departments pay you.
Now, it's a bit of a catch-22 situation, because if they don't pay you, they can't do your work. And that is an issue which we now legislate, but is there a problem with that regard? And now, I want to say from my side that I have full appreciation for the concerns that you've got about being flexible when it comes to your human resources. It must be so. And I would ask that other members of the committee would join me in saying you need that flexibility. If you get a massive investigation into correctional services, you need short-term project employment, and surely that should be permissible and it should be encouraged on a contract basis where you need to employ that. So from my side, and the committee will deliberate on that, you have a full appreciation for the need of flexibility when it comes to your human resources. Thank you, Chair, for that.
Honourable Stone Shopper.
Thank you, Chairperson. Advocate Sonny, I'm a rural woman. I don't like long sentences and complicated language. What I want to hear is that what efforts are you putting in place to make sure that those who steal from the state, the money comes back. You know, we are in very difficult times, and where I come from, the poverty, they are selling things that are processed. And people cross that time because they need services. And these things will not happen if the slave is being milked. What I want to this unit to do is to maybe write short reports, but get the money back into the fiscal of the state. That is what I want.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks, Advocate Sony, for your presentation, honorable members. It is and it has been the intention of this government to fight corruption. If one has listened to the State of the Nation address, one would have realized that the President was very, very vocal in this regard. And again, he emphasized the issue of public servants who intend doing business with a government, that there will be very, very serious repercussions. Therefore, this government is more than prepared to fight corruption. You look at the NDAP, it emphasizes that very much. So, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Member spoke of overlapping of functions with other institutions like Chapter 9 institutions, Institute of Public Protector. So, may I then be clarified on this sort of overlapping mandate with a Solicitor General in civil litigation? And again, the 668 posts, of which 86 are vacant, are the set posts not so critical to an extent that they might impact on the operations of SIU? And on presentation, Advocate Sony made mention of the fact that the SIU budget is a program 5, and they don't, SIU don't account to justice but to national treasury. May I be clarified there on Honorable Chairperson? And the issue of employee costs, as alluded to by Honorable Tamalala, and taking it further, there is also the issue of investigative consultants separate from employee costs. Are they outsourcing these investigative consultants or what? May I be clarified on the issue? And then the 1.3
income difference, any impact it makes to the operations, maybe positive impact to that effect. And Section 13 Big A of SIU make mention of funding of the said institution. So, in that section, subsection C, the risk and issue of donations and contributions. So, I would like to know, if it goes further and say, provided they are not in, there is no conflict of interest in that regard, may I be then clarified from what sources, from which organization may this donation come from? Internal or external, outside South Africa. And then there is an example of a welfare grant which was mentioned by Advocate Sony. I'm concerned because maybe the issue of amount, quantum also, should be taken into consideration so that we don't, the SIU does not attend to trivialities. And sort of misusing, spending a lot of time. Let me not use the word misusing. I apologize. Spending a lot of time on although corruption is corruption, but on a lesser amount. On employment equity, you can just further unpack it as the 51% is so silent. You may find that at senior level, there are fewer or no women at all, irrespective of gender. But at the very, very lower level, teachers, dealers, and so forth, that's where there is a concentration of women. So even that one should be clarified there on. But generally, I personally am very much impressed by the presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to thank the SIU for this report. Very much informative, and I'd like to thank you for that. And just to appreciate the fact that they did manage to take into consideration the positions of the NDP and the intention of the NDP to really create a good and clean government that fights crime and corruption. We appreciate that. And thanks for the clarity that you're giving for in terms of corruption versus maladministration. We normally talk about maladministration the same with corruption. They are the same, but to some extent, sometimes misdirect what needs to be done in terms of research and assisting in areas of that nature. Because maladministration basically would say that maybe people without skills. That are within offices, which means you should really look at how to capacitate them in order for the work of the offices to manage to be done efficiently. It's much appreciated to see the extent to which you've really managed to reduce the consultants, because remember, previously, our main concern was that the office was actually literally run by consultants. At least now we can really see that you've really drastically reduced as a consultant, and we know to the fact that you now realize that you value yourself as experts and specialists. We're hoping that you will manage to do that, maybe to some extent, because you also, on the other hand, complain about too many staff members, sometimes maybe because you're ending a letter that you hire too many people, and then when that is over, you have to know what to do. The people you have employed should therefore mean that you need a strategy to deal with measures of that nature without really having to employ your time. And maybe for now, you could look at traditionalizing and doing some kind of restructuring that can actually help quickly sort out the situation. Because indeed, the staff complement in your office is very high, so you really need to manage to do something about it. I'm quite interested in the 6% target. I look at it also through a number of years, 2014, 2015, 2015, 2016, 2017. It's just basic. What would be the reason, do you think, on that. I was actually thinking about, you know, you remember that the was with the competition commission of the collusion by the building industries when we actually doing the stadiums and things. They've actually been justified. But would you, as you can comment about it if it's possible, think that maybe a matter of that nature also may require much more investigation to see what money you can get back at stake, because a lot of money was actually taken by the building industries from the state through collusion. And of course a fine of about a billion has been paid, but much more billions have been taken by this industry from the state. And is there any possibility of the state really managing to get the money back? It's encouraging to note that the president has never really refused a request for a proclamation. I think this actually, in a way, demonstrates the intention of the implementation of the intention of the NDP of good and clean government. It may not be perfect, but I think we are really getting there. So basically what is just important for now, moving forward, is to ensure that you manage to actually focus also much more on details. Not only the case that I've mentioned, I do appreciate your re-strategizing around the how you actually manage to handle matters after you actually manage to make your funding. Like you've indicated that previously you did have to receive information and draft a report and send to the president. In the meantime, somebody is actually maybe continuing to do something that is wrong and then they leave and nothing is done. But the measures you put in place, I want to support when you actually indicate that if you find that there's something that needs to be investigated, that is criminal related over to the NPA, if there's access to procedure, then the asset procedure unit does it. You're really trying, and I'm sure even the special tribunal would actually also help to manage to give much more details in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate, before you answer, may I just say that to my honourable members, I think it would be important for us to look at the merits and demerits of the privilege, because our aim should be to assist and to correct and to advise and to guide, so that we should not really be partisan, just try to defend the terrain of our parties. These are national issues. We want a solution to national problems. My question is, actually, if I understood you well, you said that prior 2012, you just produced a report and give to the president. So it was up to him to do something with them or do nothing. But I think the important thing that the situation was changed to give you truth, that you can refer this to the courts, you can take action to recover. So I would not agree that you are toothless. Now you have been given truth to fight. This question of overlapping. Honorable Breitenbach observed that there's overlap between yourself and the public protector. But if I recall correctly, the public protector was a pre-1996 act. I'm not sure when was lost. Is it correct to say that there are overlaps between the two institutions? And if it is so, what do you think must be done and how to address that situation? With regards to the shortage of lawyers, I'm aware that there is an association of unemployed graduates. And I know of a young attorney, qualified, they can be employed, they don't have money to start their own businesses, for some youngsters with master's degrees, they can be given articles, and it is really quite disturbing that if the Department of Justice has no capacity and it has a justice college, why can't the justice college be used to train these unemployed graduates so that you don't have to worry about people who are running their own business? You can, as it was suggested, you can, by Honorable Shabalala, you can produce capacity among these unemployed, because we are saying we must address youth unemployed. And we have qualified them. We have the Justice College. I would recommend that you engage the Justice College to get them to make a contribution in that regard. Thank you.
Conscious of the fact that concerns have been raised, may I deal with the first issue you raised about overlaps between different state institutions dealing with corruption? Shouldn't I just say this? And I say it from a philosophical, jurisprudential, and legal point of view. Corruption is a worldwide phenomenon. In different countries, different mechanisms they use. And Shimon, I know we have limited time, but I just want to explain. You might remember there was an issue about the mechanism that Goldfields had used in respect of its improving its AA, affirmative action profile, or whatever. It was suggested that there was something wrong. What emerges from that is this decision. That in America, they hired private people to investigate, but Goldfields had to pay for that investigation. Now, it's not the only time. In other words, what I'm trying to say, Mr. Chairman, is that different countries use different approaches to deal with corruption. It's easy to steal, especially if you're slightly clever. What we, as the guardians of society, have to do is say, in our circumstances, what is the best mechanism to protect society? So that, as has been stated so many times, and I agree with, that our scarce resources are not looted by those not entitled to it. Now, as to whether the SIU should exist, Mr. Chairman, it's a decision for me to make. It's a decision for Parliament to make. I appreciate the concerns raised by some members. It's a question I asked myself before I took this job. And Mr. Chairman, I want to just say at a very personal level, I come from the private sector. I've been an advocate for 27 years. So I didn't need a job. I did this because I thought it could assist in this fight against corruption. And it's everybody's fight. I'm not asking to be thanked for it. I took the job. But I'm just saying, these are not easy questions. And it's good to ask the questions, I think, before one takes a decision, whichever way, there must be very careful consideration. In my dealings with the NPA, the AFU, they are all part of the law enforcement agencies. We meet quite regularly, the hawks and so on. One listed evidences, but why are there so many of these people? And assuming at the end of the day, I don't know if there is a logic, but there probably is, because what it ensures is that no one person has a monopoly of power to determine who should be investigated. So if one person is not investigated by a particular institution, another institution will investigate. So I don't know what the right answer is, and I don't pretend I know the right answer, because these are complex questions. Now, let me just say, the SIU is a unique institution. To the best of my knowledge, there are at least two other countries which have a similar institution. One, I understand, is Australia, and the other is Hong Kong. I don't know whether their powers are exactly the same, but I'm just saying, but let me tell you what is unique about the SIU. Chairman, usually, when there is a matter of serious public concern, the Westminster systems have devised a mechanism, and that's through appointing judicial commissions of inquiry. So when you have, for example, the arms deal or whatever it is, there is a judicial commission for inquiry which is appointed, and it's in, for example, the fall of the RAND in about 10 years ago. Now, all of those matters are matters of public concern. Read the SIU Act. The SIU Act says, if there are allegations of serious maladministration and or malpractice, the president may appoint the judge. So that's where we are. That's the area we're dealing with. Now, it may be, and one of the honorable members asked me, has this unit lived or outlived its usefulness? And part of the answer may be yes, because we are dealing with matters such as welfare grants and so on, where the amounts involved are 3,000 rand, 4,000 rand. What are we doing about the millions, and Mr. Swart mentioned the billions. Now those are questions we've got to ask ourselves. And it may be, Mr. Chairman, that the Act as it stands must just be implemented in a more comprehensive way. And instead of having one SIU, whenever there is a big matter, for the President to appoint a different SIU to deal with. I raise these questions because I ask myself these questions. These are not new questions to me personally. I don't know what the right answer is. I intend indicating, having thought about the matter more fully, I intend indicating my position to the President on these matters. Because they are important matters, and they're important matters for all of us to consider. But it is not for me to say that the SIU is a useful organization or not. That can only be determined by the amount of the work we do, the nature of the work we do, and the results we obtain. We only recently become results-driven. Up to now, as I indicated, that was what the Act was. Now, we must not be hasty about saying that this institution won't or can't, or another institution can do this work and investigate, therefore you don't need the SIU. Let me give an example, Mr. Chairman. You appoint a commission of inquiry to deal with something which is headed by a judge. That judge says, I find there was maladministration. I find that this is what should be done and this is what should be done. That matter still has to go to court, I'm afraid. And it's not only in South Africa. If you remember the Leveson Commission in England, which deals with press freedom, the criminal trial emanating from them just finished last week. This was after one of the most eminent judges in England pronounced on how the press had invaded freedoms. Now these are questions we've got to ask ourselves. So, you take out the SRU, who's then going to take the matter to court? Who's going to have the people prosecuted? Who's going to be that level? So I'm saying, properly construed, properly worked out, the SRU can be effective. I'm not saying it is, but I'm just saying, if we are all committed to making it work, it can work and it can serve the public. I thought I would just deal with all the questions of that nature that have been raised as the opening remarks that I want to make in relation to, or the opening answer that I want to make to the series of questions.
But I had a consensus that there's anything wrong with the SIU. There has been criticism that government is not doing enough about corruption. Now, the fact that there is an instrument like the SIU that government departments can access on their own initiative and call for proclamation, and the fact that your findings can be referred to the courts, I think is a clear indication that government is doing something on its own initiative, and that's encouraging. Can you proceed to deal with the other question?
Yes. Chairman, the first question that was raised by Ms. Breitenbach was whether it's advisable to have civil and criminal proceedings at the same time. Chairman, what one must remember is criminal proceedings are instituted by the prosecuting process. Civil proceedings, for example, in the case of matters that we want or that we think should be taken to court, they would be referred to court either by the SIU or the department concerned, the department that has suffered the losses. Now, why one would want to draw a distinction between what the outcome is going to be, I'm not clear about, and let me explain why, Mr. Chairman. You have a situation where you say a particular contract must be set aside because it is tainted by corruption. Now that's an independent allegation, and pending that court determination, that contract continues. So, for example, if there is a corrupt contract in terms of which somebody is being paid 10 million rand a month, until that contract is stopped by the courts, that continues. Of course, even if you get a criminal conviction on that, it may not necessarily stop the contract. There may have to be an audit to that effect. I don't know whether the criminal courts have the power to do it. Those are questions that may be asked. But certainly from where I sit, I do not think that there is any loss to society where this be the case. But let me also tell you what my own view is, Mr. Chairman. If a man has stolen, or a company has stolen 500 million rand, and I get that 500 million rand for society from that company's coffers, but it jeopardizes the criminal case, Chairman, my attitude is society would prefer the 500 million rand than somebody sitting in jail. But that's my view. I'm just giving you my view. I could be wrong. Somebody else can tell me what you are doing is wrong, then I must make a decision as to whether I should be running this organization or give it to somebody else. But I'm giving you my view, so I don't see a difficulty with that. Do you, Ms. Dredenbach, take in this issue? Chairman, I'm going to deal with several matters relating to the contract. There are matters that I'd rather not talk about, but if I'm asked to answer the questions, I'll ask. Let me just say, Mr. Chairman, that gives me no joy to say to the public at large that the report has been delayed yet again. It's a reflection on me and the unit. But at the same time, Mr. Chairman, we're dealing with a legal process. And that process is you investigate, and in the course of your investigation, you must deal with all the major issues that arise. In this particular case, Mr. Chairman, the issue is a matter of public knowledge that people have charged for security upgrades, and questions have arisen about whether those are security upgrades and the cost of what was charged. Now, at the end of the day, we looked at all the documents that were available, and we talked to the people who implemented the upgrades and took positions about them. In the documents that we have are a number of parties who didn't take decisions or participate in the decision-making process or were not directly involved in the upgrades. Their names are there, and we have sent to them questions relating to what was said about. Now, Mr. Chairman, at the end of the day, when the SIU sends a report to the President, we cannot exclude those matters. On the other hand, before we include the names, we have to be clear that they have been given a fair opportunity. That's what Section 33 of the Constitution requires us to do. We must act lawfully, fairly, procedurally fairly, and reasonably. Now, in determining the timetable, we had factored in three issues, Mr. Chairman. One is that our investigation would be finalized by a particular date. We would be given access to the premises so that we could assess the work that was done there, and the persons to whom we sent questions would answer the questions in a reasonable time. As far as access goes, Mr. Chairman, due to factors that I don't control or nobody else controls, we were given access for the first time last Thursday. Now, we had experts who looked at what was there and are finalizing their reports. There are two persons whose names I would prefer not to mention who have not submitted answers to the questions we've asked. I am not in control of that process. I have to work out in my own mind whether I need to put those persons on terms, because I cannot say as they stand that they are hindering the work of the Commission, the SIU. Clearly, they are delaying the report, but That doesn't mean they are hindering the work. There may come a stage when I have to make that decision. I have to consider that. I'll have to take legal advice on that and put them on terms. So, Mr. Chairman, the delay is in fact due to those two factors. The investigations have been done. The assessments of the Incondula upgrades are now being finalized by the experts, and the answers to queries we've raised, and very extensive, Mr. Chairman, continue that as a fact. Some of them goes 10 pages, well, one of them goes 10 pages, if my memory serves me correctly, and the other goes around 20 to 25 pages. So, I just want to place on record, Mr. Chairman. The SIU owes this to the public to bring this matter to a close as soon as possible. At the same time, we live in a constitutional democracy which requires that the requisite processes are followed. We could not just go into the premises because they are private persons and there are certain protocols that have to be followed. And attempts have been made for some time. There are different government departments involved in that, and we have to negotiate it all. Let me also finally say, Mr. Chair, you read the public protector's report, you will see that she was waiting for months and months for certain matters to be heard. Now, we could take that course as well and wait. We try to be persuasive and say we need these things because the public is waiting for them. That's the position we are in. I say to you, Mr. Chairman, we are anxious to get Incondula off our table as the public to receive the information that the report has been sent to the President. Chairman, one of the questions that I was asked us, and it came in different forms, but let me address that to you. When one reads the SIU Act, the Act says we must submit our investigation, the report, our report to the President. And that's what we will do. We are not entitled, as I read the Act, and I take comfort from the fact that the Commission's Act has been interpreted in that fashion similarly, that all that we are entitled to do is to submit the report. We can't submit it to anybody else. Once the President gets the report, the President is entitled to make the report available to whomsoever he wishes. I don't have the power. SIU doesn't have the power. I can't utilize it. I accept maybe people who have a different view, and the fact may have to be dissolved in the courts. That I've got no difficulty with. But I'm just placing on the record before this committee so that this committee knows what my stance is. And that's not because I don't favor an open society, it's because I am constrained by the terms of what the Act allows me and the SIU. So,
thank you very much. I think you've dealt with that matter sufficiently. You have to operate within the law, and your pace is determined by what is possible in terms of the law. So I think we must let the matter rest.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
No, it's fine, Mr. Chair. I'll just ask a follow up question. Mr. Chair, the matter is off. Thank you.
Stephen, it's also been suggested that our employee costs are too high. I agree that we need to measure where we are in terms of what we produce. Mr. Chairman, what we've also got to be careful about is that people have rights. And one way to downscale, given where we have been for the last 15 years, it becomes a difficult issue. And what we've got to do is just find the right size with the unit and to increase and decrease as the need arises. Chairman, I know you also raised this question of how do we train, what do we do about the shortage of lawyers? So may I just say that we did embark on a scheme to train lawyers. We are not trainers in legal skills, universities, the bar, the sidebar, the advocate's profession, the attorney's profession, has spent centuries debating how to get these legal skills fine-tuned. Which why that, I've got to say, Mr. Chairman, it hadn't worked. Lawyers' skills, unlike other skills, is largely a product of vast, vast court experience. It doesn't arise from somebody sitting somewhere and saying, these are the processes you must go through. It doesn't work that way. Let me also say that one cannot simply say, I have a person who had an LLB or even an LLM. The people who are on the other side and whom we are ranged against have 30 and 40 years of experience. In regards to one simple employee, in regard to a disciplinary matter concerning a junior employee, she has employed, based in Durban, she has employed the most expensive legal firm in Durban to defend her, and she's a junior employee. I know these matters because I work in that space. So it's not getting a lawyer. We need experienced lawyers who understand how to cope with these challenges, and they are major challenges. They say about the different persons that are one of the members. Asked this question about whether we are not, in fact, a unit that has run its course. I've already dealt with it, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say, yes. Chairman, I don't know whether the suggestion is, and I don't know whether
it's too vague. Can you explain why do you think so, so that we are on the same page?
With great pleasure. The point I made was that this is a creature of 1996. It is a creature that was established for a very specific purpose and in a very specific context in 1996. And I added to that in a time in which institutions like the Public Protector and the AG were being set up. And we read in the Act that it talks of units and tribunals, and if it wasn't ever going to be a statutory or standing body, but bodies that were proclaimed for very specific purposes for a specific unit. And therefore, my question was then, given this, has the unit perhaps run, has it uplifted its initial purpose, and in the context of duplication of functions? So I didn't personally make the claim that I've lived its usefulness. I simply, in that context, asked the question, given the act itself and the context in which we operate now.
You know, I am mindful of the fact that there is a perception, because one of the questions that was raised was, because it is formed in terms of an act appointed by president, it's not independent. Now, in a recent, I don't know whether the suggestion is that it could never be independent, or it's not independent under me. Now, the reason I ask that, Mr. Chairman, is in a recent judgment that went eventually to the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, this is the All Pay case, the Supreme Court of Appeal said, it is not helpful in legal matters to deal with issues by innuendo. If you want to make an allegation, make the allegation. Now, I don't know whether the suggestion is that the unit cannot be independent because of the act, or the unit is not independent because I'm in charge. I don't know what the suggestion is. But let me just say, if we say it cannot be independent, we have a very serious jurisprudential question. That means no permission of inquiry could be independent. No appointment could be independent. So people, one of the things where I think members as public representatives need to take into account, we need in institutions like this to attract people from the private sector, people who are independently minded and are not dependent on state institutions for their promotion and so on. People who would come to these institutions knowing that they could go back to their practices and so on. And that may be the advantage of the independent units, or the having a unit for each one. But Mr. Chairman, if the suggestion is, under me, the unit is not independent, I must say I resent this.
No, that's why I said the person who raised that concern should motivate, because all that the president does, he appoints a suitably qualified person, and Advocate Sony is a senior person. If you want to appoint a judge, you can't look anywhere except among senior counsel. And he is appointed in terms of the act, and whatever he does or has to do is based on an act. There is no force outside that dictates to him. So, and I want to hope and believe that when you said SIU is not independent, we're not referring to him, because otherwise, by analogy, we can also say that all the judges are not independent because they are appointed by the president. So can you clarify yourself? Because
yes. There was no, I make no allegation or claim that either the SIU or its head is not independent. And in fact, I've been very happy with the openness and honesty of Advocate Sony and his statements in the media about, you know, being ready and willing to take on this job. That was not in any way a claim made towards the person. I raised questions around the operations in terms of statute of the unit and expressed concern that an investigation in this instance, it's not been the case to date, an investigation into the alleged conduct of people at the private property of the sitting president is being conducted upon proclamation of that sitting president. And we've received indication that it's also been delayed. And the indication that we've received was that it was because of people who have not been named. So the allegation was not against the unit. I can appreciate and understand that the unit may experience incredible difficulty with an incredibly complex investigation like this. So if there was any perception created that I was attacking independence or integrity of Advocate Stoney or of the unit, I would like to ensure or assure the members of the committee and also the SIU that is not the case at all. And I'd be nothing but impressed with the overtures made by the SIU since his appointment. Thank you.
Yes, but I also understood the Honourable Member to raise the debate around whether the work of the unit was so valid, and he was raising the debate, a question. I listened very carefully, and it was purely to raise whether, and I think as of Tony, you responded and said, well, it is a debate that one should have about this. So my understanding was that it was purely about the debate about the existence of the unit and other investigative units. It was nothing personal, but I think he has clarified that. So, as long as that's concerned,
doesn't matter. No, I think we should also remember that when the issue of open MP mandate arose, it was not in respect of the SIU. It was in respect of the Human Rights Commission and the public protector. So, from the explanation of Advocate Sony, it is quite clear that his mandate is clear, he has clarified it, and there's no holes that we can find. So I think, therefore, that even the person of Overleaf does not apply to him. He is operating in terms of his act, and he has explained it, and the parameters have been explained. So I think that's why I said at the outset, we must not generalize. We're a justice committee. We must phrase our question in such a way that we don't cause confusion to our guests. Honorable
Majority. Thank you, Chief. Let's not belabor the point. I think the point has been made and it has been clarified. And maybe what I just need to say is that we have so many institutions that actually say that South Africa is very serious about fighting crime and corruption. To a point where we'll start thinking that it was just too many institutions. But the fact of the matter is, we're trying to actually roll out the mandate that the NDP and other processes that actually set up for us to really run a clean and good government. So now what I'm actually requesting is that the point has been made. Can we get the answer to other questions, please?
I think that has been explained. This is a unique institution, and it has been so much clarified that nobody can doubt the validity of this SIU and its independence. So we must just move to other things, because there can't be any question about its independence and its validity of its mandate, and it must continue.
Mr. Chairman, let me say I appreciate the fact that that was not what was suggested. I'm pleased that we've moved on the record. Mr. Chairman, let me then deal with the questions raised by Mr. Swart, namely access to reports. I already indicate what I understand the legal position to be, and of course, in regard, for example, to the SABC report, Mr. Swart will recall that that was in fact debated by Parliament, because the President did make it available to either the committee or the Parliament, and that's when steps were taken. With regard to the recent appointment, is this also, Mr. Chairman, I need to just clarify that the SIU can only work on the basis of their proclamation. Now, proclamations usually say must investigate as from this date to a particular date, which is the date of the proclamation. So the recent appointment of the COO will fall outside that proclamation, and we won't have the power unless a new proclamation is issued. Chairman, setting targets
and I appreciate the concerns Mr. Swart raised, because when we were here last time, the targets were quite high. It's just that there are certain difficulties. And let me give an example. I come back to the Altay case. There, the Constitutional Court found that there was an administrative invalidity in the appointment of a particular tenderer for a 10 billion rand contract. Now, this is a start. Let's just say it had been done on our investigation, on the basis of an investigation we conducted. Taxpayer hasn't saved 10 billion rand, but people would say there is maladministration. And that's the point I was making. The difference between being able to recover and to make sure that the proper processes are put in place. In that particular case, the court said, let this continue, but a new tender must now be issued so that administration is seen to be fair to everybody. Now, that's the question about targets, and maybe we can have that debate on some other occasion, how we should reflect such victories if we achieve them. Shem, we appreciate all the support we have received on the question of the flexibility of number of employees and so on. You know, the easiest part of our work is the investigation. Because there you go, you get all the information, you collect it, you suggest this is what happens. The difficult part is persuading our courts and different tribunals that something must be done. So I appreciate the concerns expressed by members who say, but get the money back. And that is what we are now directing our investigations toward, making sure that the money is in fact brought back. But unfortunately, those are not necessarily processes in our hands. They are in the hands of courts, which are independent, and they would make the final decision. Our job is to get the best evidence possible or available for the court to make a decision in favor of such a claim. Chairman, I've already dealt with the question of, because there are two views being expressed. We've got 86 vacancies, and then one that perhaps we're sending too much on our human resources. And those are the balances with Grantee said, and I can assure this committee that we try and desperately. It's much easy. It's a difficult horse to ride, but we are certainly doing our best. And it's simply one consideration, Mr. Chairman. What would a good administrator do in our position? There are 86 vacancies, but they are, our costs are too high. Do we fill those vacancies for filling them, or do we say, let's make the maximum use of the resources? I think the public would say, don't incur further costs. So that's the balance we keep trying to strike. Now, Mr. Chairman, the answer as to whether we report to the Department of Justice or to the Treasury, we report to the Department of Justice. The Minister of Justice is the oversight minister in regard to the SIU. In fact, you will see, Mr. Chairman, that all proclamations bear the signature of the Minister of Justice. Fortunately, Mr. Chairman, whilst the number of consultants is too high, it is being reduced, and we find it an embarrassment. I place that on the table. The only people whom I now approve of are where there are experts that are required. Like, for example, if we need to make an assessment of whether we got our money's worth, we would employ an architect for a quantity surveyor and things like that. But that's expertise that we in the SIU do not have. Sherman, in regard to funding, we do not get funding from donations. We would not accept donations. We do not accept donations. Nobody has come forward to donate anything to us. And I think the fear is we will investigate them and find something. So, the question of, again, balancing the work we do, for example, should we be investigating welfare grants? Let me put that in historical perspective. When that proclamation was granted, it was done on the basis that there were tens of thousands of people who had illicitly benefited from receiving grants to which they were not entitled. Now, although each employee each person was getting 300-400 rand or even 1,000 rand, at the end of the day, the scale of that operation made it necessary for government to ensure that the matter was investigated and processes were put in place to ensure that it doesn't happen again. And that, to a large extent, is what we have done with our investigations. So I need to be frank and say that these matters keep cropping up, but we have now the skills and the mechanism just to detect them sooner and to find the ways and means of getting back what was illicitly taken. Chairman, the issue of employment equity and higher positions, I'm pleased to say, Mr. Chairman, that in the last 3 or 4 weeks, we have appointed 3 female persons to managerial positions. And that is something we at the SIU are very proud about. So the figures are not just there in terms of numbers, they also extend. Of course, we've still got to do more. Black women have been the most disadvantaged in our 350 years of oppression, and we need to make sure that they are given every opportunity. But we certainly are not oblivious to the fact that it's not only the numbers, it's positions as well. Chairman, let me deal with the question of the 66% as the target in relation to proclamations. The fact of the matter is, it would be extremely ambitious and perhaps irresponsible for us to say we will deal with all the in a particular year we will deal with all the problems. Our investigations take an average between 3 to 5 months. And so if proclamation is received around September, October, it's going to be impossible to finalize that in that particular year. Finally, the question of whether we could do something in relation to the construction industry and seek proper redress. Chairman, that is not a question that we haven't applied our minds to. We believe that it is possible. What doesn't effectively emerge from what has happened is that there was government collusion in together with the collusion by the different construction companies. But our act is wide enough with it to be thought that there should be such recovery, our act is wide enough to include that as a matter that should be investigated by the SIU, and then to do it purely for the purpose, or mainly for the purpose of recovering that which they illicitly took from the taxpayer by overcharging for the constructions during the World Cup.
Chairman, I believe I've answered most of the major questions.
You did, Advocate. You made a statement that you were not in that position because you're looking for a job. And I just want to say that, in fact, to be in that position, the sacrifice that you made, because not many people of your caliber will be eligible to be judges or make a lot of money in private countries. They actually accept such an appointment. It really means that you put the public interest before your own interest, and we are proud as a country to have a person of your caliber accepting to serve in that position. And I think I'll be speaking on behalf of all the members here, that no one doubts the independence of your independence in the matter, and we are happy that you're also doing everything in terms of the statute, and you are setting a good example to others, and we are grateful to you for that, and thank you. We are a very good public servant.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, we just reiterate that no personal attack was launched on Mr. Sony, and we should not perceive it as such. Mr. Chair, I'm really not satisfied with the power given by Mr. Sony that he would prefer to name the people involved. I guess if it's a power of reasons, I can see a reason why they shouldn't be named, and I'd like to know who they are. I asked for the relationship part of the Department of Public Works. I've got no reply to that. I'd like a reply. I would like to know what they performed. There is no reply to that. I would like to know what steps are you taking to ensure that they actually conform. Mr. Sunny spoke at length about placing oral pressure on people and other kinds of pressure. I'd like to know what is in fact being done to ensure that they perform and perform timely. He answered these questions when were they answered? He answered the question on when the report will be ready for the President, and the answer is he can't say, which I accept. And I asked if he had any issue or any difficulty in submitting the report to the President.
Yeah,
well,
we
implicated in that,
so
I'd like an answer to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Honorable the report of the public protector was submitted by me. And the President is on record as saying that he will answer comprehensively. And that comprehensive report will come to us. I don't think that we should try to enter that process from the back door. So I am, with respect, not going to allow that, because the matters that you want the advocate to deal with are the matters that are being dealt with in the report that is before Parliament, which must be processed as soon as we get the comprehensive report.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I can't agree with your assessment of the questions. I don't think that's anything to do with the reply that's got to be supplied by the President. There are questions that were sent to Mr. Sony to answer, and I'm asking him to answer them. If you're not going to allow the question, if you're disallowing the question, then I would like the report to reflect that you've
said
you.
There's a point of order.
The point of order is, Honourable Breitenbach, your concern is genuine. We all are anxiously waiting for a report, but you want to interrogate a report that is not here in this meeting will constitute a problem. Obviously, the report will come to us once it's available, and those questions we will then interrogate and interrogate them at that time. Thank you, Chair. We can only engage on process matters as to where the process is, so that the SIU can just indicate to us as to how far we've worked on it,
whether there are any problems. Can I finish?
No, I have a point of order.
Yes, but I want to finish. Can I finish? Yes. So please. Let's look at process. We cannot be in the position to interrogate a report now in this meeting. You can't interrogate a report that's not before the committee.
Something on this matter. We invited the advocate to come and deal with matters relating to the budget. We didn't invite him to give us a progress report on his investigation. In fact, I just allowed it because I didn't want to suppress anybody. He was not giving a report, a progress report on his investigation. So I want to close that matter because actually that matter is not relevant.
No, no, no. Mr. Chair, again.
Yeah, Honourable Schwab.
The question
on investigations that it has conducted. This is one of the investigations. It has to report us twice a year. This is one of those. It is fully within the ambit. Chair, I would ask him to review your decision and allow the advocate, he can choose not to answer the questions. But I need to submit to your ruling, which I do, but it might be wiser to allow the questions and to ask whether he wants to answer. It's up to him. But Chair, that I think is very important, that the SIU has to report on its investigation. To what degree they do that is obviously within their own
hands. You are right. He must report twice, but today he was not asked to come and make such a report. Today he has come to talk about the budget. So I'm prepared to invite him again to come and report, but today he was not asked to come and report. That's why I did allow that question. Thank you very much.
On a point of order, this is a budget review and recommendation report. So we are sitting here with an annual performance plan and a strategic plan. That has vacancy rates. It has processes. It has over and underspending. It has questions on the Section 32 quarterly reports, those kinds of things. These are not simply take the money and go and spend it all you like for a year. This is not a sweetheart process in which we ask to rubber stamp a budget for a department. Now, for us as Parliament, to support an appropriation process in which we are not even given an opportunity to ask questions, thorough questions about where that money is going, I respectfully disagree with that.
I can see you are passionate about this thing, but you must first understand what you are passionate about. You see, the issue on the table is whether or not Advocate Tony should give us a report, because the law requires him to give report to us twice a year. I'm saying we have not invited him this time to give him one of the full reports required by the Act. We invited him to brief us on matters relating to the budget. So you are too much in a hurry. We will invite him, the time will come. And with regard to the other things that you're talking about, nobody prevents you from commenting on them. But I've closed the discussion on the second report. The rest of the things you are free to raise. Please raise them. Honourable President Bach.
Only the court might dismay with your ruling, Mr. Chair. I said please record my dismay with your ruling. Thank you.
Emotional decisions or things.
I had a question. But also please provide us in writing with your ruling, because there's now six different rulings. They keep on changing. The question relates to the fact that the
you see, respect for others amounts to respect to your own self. There was a issue saying that the advocate is forced by law to report to us twice a year. I made one ruling. The ruling is that today we did not invite him to come and give us a report on as required by the law, but to brief us on matters pertaining to the budget. So my ruling is one. So there are no six rulings.
There were two different ones.
The one was that this is a briefing in which we discussed the budget. Then as President Swart said, the Act provides for this. Then you made a second ruling saying that it's not, this is not that forum. So I'm just pointing to the fact that there were different rulings and they kept on changing as people were speaking.
You don't understand the meaning of a ruling. I ruled, I stand by the ruling, and I'm proceeding, and I'm putting it in record. The proceedings are being recorded.
Then I will ask a question. And it relates to the budget.
Can you use your powers, because you have to recognize us before you can speak on the on the mic. Otherwise, you're going to be running a meeting that's not having any order.
I recognize the lesson proceed.
On the budget, Mr. Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. The SIU has appropriated or wants to appropriate 300 million rand directly from Treasury. That's not the, its own revenue. That's 300 million rand for, as we were informed today, 46 investigations. Earlier in this budget review process, we had the public protector here wanting to appropriate the same amount, 300 million rand, for roughly 26,000 investigations. Now, I understand that it's not within the ambit of the SIU to question this, or I'm not going to ask you the answer question about that, but my question is, how many of these investigations, given the 300 million rand budget compared to the 200 million rand for the public protector, how many of these investigations are successfully referred to the, first of all, referred to the NPA for prosecution, secondly, successfully prosecuted, and then finally results in an actual conviction?
Situation, and there have been
members of the executive during budget debates where I've raised it, that they've agreed with me, and they say that they understand that the capacity of this unit must be improved to combat the corruption and the figures that we speak about of 30 million men. And it's a win-win situation. Thank you, Chair.
With your suggestion, I must say that Mr. Sell of the DA set a very good example. He's right to me and say, before this institution comes, I'll raise the following issue. Ask them to prepare on it. But to sit here now and say to advocate your advocate, give us a breakdown of this, and I would regard that as a fair question, reasonable. And I wouldn't ask him to answer unfair and unreasonable questions. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, Mr. Bonga?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks to SC, sorry. I think, Chair, just before I ask the question, it may be important that I think we need to emphasize that we are not a tribunal. We are just a committee of parliament that does oversight. So we can't come here and want to force the advocate to answer certain questions like telling us who, give us the names of those people when these vendors are still under the investigation itself. So members who may need induction, I think we may have to organize it so that we get clear on our own issues. Yeah. I understand you do some collaborations with other institutions, particularly on the issue of the anti-corruption system and so on. I think that is a very good one. Very good work. So what I want to know is that what do we have an enabling legislation that gives this cooperation, because I think the work that arises out of that that testing is very important, but I see a lacuna in the sense that we may have problems in the future where you say we are acting in terms of what is an enabling legislation in terms of that cooperation. I think that's my question, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would ask you not to disturb my chapter. I want him to leave. Chairperson, if you have got any way of actually influencing Treasury, I would like you to make sure that this unit is properly funded. I don't want the advocate to strain, because you see, he made me happy about talking about returning the money to the coffers of the state, because that is why I want to see happening. Those who steal the money must know that the money will be demanded back by the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the SIU. Chairperson, I wanted to make a follow-up on the issue raised that the SIU experiences a challenge with the shortage of experienced lawyers. I can imagine, Chairperson, the predicament of a rookie lawyer in front of a very experienced law firm. But my take is, even the legal gurus in those firms were once rookies themselves. You indicated, Chairperson, that we have unemployed graduates who might be having challenges in saving articles and becoming attorneys themselves. So I was just checking with the SIU if they could maybe consider the issue of internship programs for unemployed graduates who in time will graduate and become better people, better ways in the future. Lastly, Chairperson, I think it has been put beyond any reasonable doubt that the SIU remains relevant. As long corruption as one of the social and economic issues of our time, this unit will remain relevant. Thank you.
Sonny, you said that your personal preference is to recover the money and not to have people sitting in jail. You are not alone. I'm one of those people who think that way. Because the country needs resources. The prisons are overcrowded. And the prisons even breed criminals. So if we can recover as much money as possible and use that money to deliver services, all the better. So unless there's any member of parliament who thinks otherwise, I think that is the correct approach. Is there anyone who is unhappy with the recovery of money?
You need a deterrent as well. You need both. You can't just have recovery of a person, steal the 100 million and you cover 10 million and there's no deterrent. There must be a deterrent, whatever that is. And that is why it's a combination of the both. But in view of our financial crisis, it's obviously very important to recover funds. But there must be. That is why we have criminal justice system as well.
I'm just focusing on the recovery. To say we have to recover, if we have to prioritize recovery, let's prioritize and recover without letting the criminals go. I'm not suggesting that we leave them go. Let them cover the money for the
year. I agree with you, Chair.
Okay, I think it's a good thing to advocate in the same year. I can see we have agreed on it.
It's not that six rulings, now it's one. Thank you very much.
We could just agree. That's something we can agree on.
Yeah, but thanks for keeping the comedy active. We need energy. Okay. Sorry, I advocate later.
Advocate, I don't want you to answer this because I don't think you could, but if you wish to, you can go ahead. I'm sitting here and I'm still stuck with the scenario of someone standing at the desk with a leaking bucket. And all they're doing is try to make that person feel the water more open set this way that the bucket will fill when we all know that it's leaking. I'm still not satisfied that you spend so much money on investigations that you yourself have admitted. But after you've investigated, nothing happens to some of the men. You even point out to the staff. So for me, the relevance of FIU as I sit here and walk away from this presentation, honestly, will be in what happens with the investigations. We can't spend so much money and so much skill and investigate something for the sake of investigating. So I walk away just thinking, what a waste.
Honorable Shola, you have been going in and out. You raised that issue at the beginning of the SIU being toothless. It was extensively addressed and there's consensus in this house.
Not mine.
Okay, so then...
You say me.
I say consensus in this house with you as an exception. So so you are the minority in this committee that thinks that this committee, this SIU is not effective. But the rest of us are very happy with the work that they're doing. We want them to continue the work and we want them to be resourced for that purpose. Thank you very much. I think we've come to the end of this.
Thank you. Thank you.